And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 121 of Fans of Power. I'm the man behind the mask, Joe Amato, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. What's going on, T-Rex?
I was worried that this time change was really going to make me super tired recording tonight, but I'm actually feeling quite good right now, so I'm ready to bring my A game and step into the ring and deliver a performance that's going to have the fans talking afterwards. You know, one of those five-star matches that you have in the ring to kind of coincide with what's going on tonight there. That's what I want to lead tonight. I want to lead the fans. Like, they'll just be talking about the performance. Like, just like, oh my God, can you believe how on par Tyler was on Fans of Power? Unbelievable. They'll be talking about it in the dirt sheets and the pro podcasting torch and all kinds of stuff like that, you know?
Hey, well, there you go. I mean, we always try to deliver. You never know. Everything always comes out different. You never know how we're going to perform.
We completely bombed tonight, both you and I. You know, we have no idea.
Exactly. So first, I wanted to say in the chat room, we have Chris Simpson, Third Triumvirate Studios, Jake Juggalo, Chris Simpson, Christopher Dahlberg, Zentron, and JSP. Oh, wait a second. And we got V-Dub. Oh, and we got Ruth. Hey, Ruth. So a lot of people joining us tonight. So thank you all for
gracing us with your presence on a pay-per-view evening.
Exactly. Because sometimes, you know, when these WWE pay-per-views are on, some people might be into those. And Eric Amon, thank you for joining us. And as always, after we do all our, you know, talking and rambling, like I said, I try to get to you always in the chat room, but towards the end of the show, we always open it to you guys, and you can ask us absolutely any questions about Masters you want, from toys to comics to cartoons, movie, whatever it may be. So, and for whatever reason, I hate when this happens, and Tyler always notices it, and I should upgrade it, but sometimes my mask wants to just be difficult, and it keeps dropping. So my eyes, and it starts hitting my eyelashes, and I can't see, but I guess that's the price I have to pay for wearing the mask all the time. So it's no one to blame but myself.
I never noticed it.
Well, it does. And it's like, God, it drives me insane when it does this. But
Joe will just stop talking and immediately kind of, like last week, and I played the Unsolved Mysteries when he completely botched. I had a joke for Penny Dreadful and everything, and Joe just kept rambling on and on and on and on and killing my whole introduction to the segment that I came up with. And I played the music, and Joe goes, and I'm assuming that's his way of saying, oh, God, this is so silly and stupid. But he may have been messing with his mask and like, oh, God, my head. I don't know what.
So, no, there was that.
Stop talking, slowly grabs the mask. You just don't know, is he having, you know, costume issues, or is he like, oh God.
No, but you know, it happens on occasion, and I forget that obviously, you know, yes, when you talk, the screen go big, you know, it goes big, and then I'm the little icon, but all the time while you're while you're talking or I'm talking, I always see you in the big screen. You always see me in the big screen. So you're obviously seeing me do this, wondering, what is Joe doing? But last week, sure enough, there was like an eyelash popped into my eye and it was starting to burn. And I'm sitting there trying to get it. But I guess it's more noticeable to you than maybe the people there when I go into mini mode.
Is it, so you're going to be like Jim Carrey when he rubs soap in his eyes and Liar, Liar, like all of a sudden you just...
when I'm beating the crap out of myself.
Yeah.
There you go.
What are you doing? I'm kicking my ass. You mind?
I remember that. But no, as for recent news, I really can't think of anything recent because, like we always, if we could start off thinking if there's anything about a cartoon or movie or toys or anything, but I actually don't I don't think anything has popped up that is relevant currently. Can you think of anything? Because beyond the deadline of March 15th that you said to get your pre-orders in, but...
last day to subscribe, so I'm gonna hope that I can get the Filmation sub permitting. I got the funds to do it this Thursday, so I'm hoping I got it. I got Dial-A-Mug and Karg, and I want to correct myself. I called Rap Trap Raptor last week. I caught myself the next morning like, oh my God, what the hell was I thinking when I said Raptor instead of Rap Trap? So,
and I heard
for listening last week, I completely botched his name, and I thought, well, you know what? The character had no name. It was something that Super 7 gave to him, so I wasn't going to beat myself up too much about it. But I did want to correct myself for goofing that last week.
Okay, no, and you know what's funny? And hello, Adam Gabbard in the chat room. But no, you know what's funny? Is I heard you say Raptor.
Then why
I'll be honest. Well, that's the thing. I'll be honest. I couldn't even remember what his new name was because I knew him as the Horde Mummy from when they showed him in the old magazines, the Tomarts. So, rap, trap, rap, tour, rap this. I was like, I didn't know. You know, like, is mama call him Clay? I'ma call him Clay. So, they called him Horde Mummy? I'ma call him Horde Mummy. I was like, I didn't even think of rap tour and rap trap.
But then I thought rap tour doesn't sound too bad, you know. I mean, you know, his rapping's going to come off you and attack you and wrap you up and, you know.
Yeah, so I get the name of what they're trying, and hello, Ivan in the chat room. But, no, so we had a couple different topics. Like I said, we're going to finish up the three-part DC miniseries that we've been talking about. Also, we're going to discuss something about King He-Man and also about She-Ra, something that maybe some people have never really thought of. I guess, you know, just, but we'll get to that. But I figured we're going to start up.
Throw out to you on the podcast. I was going to tell Doug to put it in the description, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to just save this to a certain point because I'm not going to. It's not a hard topic, but it's something like, you know what? It kind of puts a spin on something I used to do, but gets you and I both involved in this. So I'll wait and spring it on you when we've got a moment before we answer fan questions.
Okay, no, that sounds good. But all right. Well, I wanted to start off with something, and which will lead to the She-Ra discussion about something in particular, but. King He-Man, this, I mean, like I said, it's just my opinion. If people like him, it's great. But I just, something about this whole King He-Man has always rubbed me the wrong way. And I'll be honest, I haven't read all the new current mini comics that came with the figures. So if there's story elements I'm missing, it's because I didn't read. But when I first heard the figure, heard everything, the thing that gets me is it's Prince Adam. And you always figure Prince Adam is the one that would become king. And yes, I know that Prince Adam transforms into He-Man, and everybody can say, yes, He-Man, Prince Adam, same person. In my mind, I always still see them, even though they could share the same mind, memory, thoughts, everything, I still see them as separate characters. Sure, is He-Man maybe an extension of Prince Adam and being more powerful? Some can say that, but I see He-Man as myself, especially how MYP put it across. You see him as a boy, when he's Prince Adam, but then when he becomes the man, He-Man, he is a man, and he's super powerful. He's the most powerful man in the universe. So the thing that just is irritating me about this King He-Man is, you know, what has given you the right to have the name as King He-Man? It's like, you're just disregarding Prince Adam as if he's not important and nothing. Like, okay, maybe you're going to become He-Man or what? Just never want to become Adam again? Like, he's not important. He's nothing. Just like in the new DC, I mean, I'm sorry, in the Masters of the Universe versus Thundercats comics, when, remember, He-Man died or Prince Adam died. And at the funeral, to honor Prince Adam and his casket and everything else around, did they use the royal crest for their family? No. They emblaze his casket with He-Man symbol, the He-Man symbol everywhere. But it's this, I don't know. I just don't like the idea of King He-Man because I don't think he should be the one that should be king. It should be King Adam. But that's just me. That's a little rambling. I'll pass it to you, but I don't like it.
God, I got so much to say about this.
Go on, lay it on us.
I would rank this up there with my distaste for King Grayskull. I mean, in recent years, of course, the 2008 cartoon is well over a decade old, closing in on two decades now. And much like the Thundercat He-Man crossover, you're dealing with, we're not going to get into specifics of bashing, you know, specific people who are responsible for these really bad ideas.
No, so, not that at all. You're right. Not that at all. I just don't like the idea of King, King He-Man.
I'm not going to start naming names and attacking them, these people personally, because it has nothing to do with this. This is an idea that I remember when it was introduced that the sub exclusive is a King He-Man. I'm like, what the hell do we need a King He-Man for? You can't have a King He-Man because there's no logic behind a King He-Man. So when they introduce put it in the mini comics, I'm like, this makes no sense whatsoever. And not to mention, I mean, I think it's safe to say from casual He-Man fans to hardcore He-Man fans that you accept the fact that He-Man and Teela do have a thing for each other. Or Adam and Teela. He-Man and Teela. Teela, and then eventually, I think it's safe to say that these two would end up together. However, The people who are writing current canon, from comic books to mini comics and what have you, are completely neglecting the fact that Teela is destined to take on the mantle of sorceress for Castle Grayskull, which means she will be cursed, doomed, or given the responsibility, however you want to look at it, to stay within the walls of Grayskull and never leave again unless it's in the form of Zoar the Falcon, once the responsibility has been passed on to her. Adam, I'm sure it's safe to say at some point, will not constantly be carrying on the role of He-Man. He is going to have to take on duties as king once Randor has either died or passed, you know, the crown to Adam. However it gets. So you can't have a King He-Man because, okay, then we're just going to piss away the whole special aspect of He-Man and Prince Adam, that He-Man is the alter ego of Prince Adam, that it's important, it's been emphasized in the cartoon and on many other occasions in various canons, that it's important to maintain the secret identity so that way the royal family and those closest to Adam, loved ones, friends, whatever, would not be met in more specific danger by Skeletor, the Horde, the Snake Men, Negator, Shakoti, you name it. You know, anybody found out that Prince Adam and He-Man are the same, Teela, the royal family, Orko, Man-at-Arms, the heroic warriors, specific villagers, Lady Edwina, you know, Lady Amanda, anybody that can be close to Adam in any form or fashion now has a target on their head, all because we pissed away the secret identity. And to have this idea, and to make it into a figure, and I mean, like, I don't care what the figure looked like. When you're telling me it was just like, it could have been made whatever, I would have disliked it, because it's, you're destroying the whole essence of the He-Man Prince Adam dynamic and what He-Man is and what Prince Adam is. You know, you're forgetting that Prince Adam is He-Man. Like, what He-Man does, that's what Prince Adam is thinking and choosing to do. And as Prince Adam, he can't be too brave and too strong and gung-ho and intelligent, because he doesn't want anybody to have any clue that when he runs off, that, you know, wait a second here, you know, you have to make it sound like this is the last guy on this planet who could possibly be the most powerful man in the universe. And to change that up because, oh, Skeletor's been defeated, I'm just going to keep my alter ego 24/7 here.
Yeah.
The hell with Prince Adam.
Right.
And just give up my identity to everybody here, because the writing is just poor and lazy and about as aspiring as a fart in the wind. It was just so it drove me nuts. And when I would see it in the mini comics, and people were like, oh, this is great. And I'm like, do you people not see the elephant in the room here? I mean, not only is the elephant in the room, but it has placed its ass on our heads and just taken a big dump all over us here. You know, how do you not see that you can't have this? Because, I mean, if you buy along with, and I like the character of Hero, I don't buy him as some jungle boy that they found that was in the original Bible.
No.
I buy the idea that, you know, obviously He-Man or Adam and Teela, I'd like to think, would have like a secret wedding in secret, because you can't have, you know, the world know that Adam and Teela have a thing for each other, because that means Castle Grayskull, it's always going to be in trouble anyway. But you put an even bigger mark on Teela's head if you find out that she is secretly married or is married, period, to Prince Adam. So that's got to be kept secret. And vice versa, you cannot have King Adam or let it be known that King Adam is married to the sorceress Teela. So that's got to be kept secret. So now you got the idea that Adam and Teela would have a child in secret, and that they wouldn't know who the mother is, but Adam would probably say, I just adopted this boy. I'm going to raise him as my own. He won't have a mother, but knowing full well that his mother is Teela the Sorceress, who would be watching her son grow from afar as Zoar the Falcon, or through living pictures or her whatever various means of like watching her son grow up. You know, I mean, that's a story in itself, watching this very difficult marriage try to be successful when they're both leading two separate lives, worlds apart. And Adam's raising Dare on his own, and Teela's watching from afar. But no. We get this pissed away storyline of, we're going to give up Prince Adam, and King Heyman is just going to rule, and everyone's going to be well aware that when Queen Marlena is retired and residing in the Royal Palace, well, we can just go after her 24/7, because that means King Heyman, since we know that there's a very special connection there. It's just, it doesn't work in comic books to piss away the secret identities. They do it in movies all the time, too, and it doesn't work here. God, I hate
like,
it.
What, yeah, because, like, what is the sense of creating if then years later, let's get rid of it? Because we know, as in the beginning with Masters of the Universe, it was just He-Man, which was great for what the story was as that. But once they introduced the secret identity, it's like, now that's something that's really pivotal and important to this whole story in the mythology of Masters. So if you're still keeping it and then now doing new stories, but then let's just get rid of it and have everybody know. It's like, you guys aren't getting the point of it. And plus the whole thing with, think of that. Think of now if he's King He-Man. And he's just disregarded, okay, no more Prince Adam, forget Prince Adam. Think of that. Think of, if you are known as the most powerful man in the universe, you have this gigantic target on your back where Skeletor, every evil forces from other worlds are always targeting basically He-Man. They know he's the man that tries to protect Grayskull. He's the one that is, you know, super powerful and is in their way. Well, now that you are permanently King He-Man and you still would have targets on your back, think about, since you gave up being Adam, the times where you could possibly, like, don't you want to relax? It's like we said in a real early podcast a long time ago. I was like, you know, there's been times where he's Adam, and Adam, just as Prince Adam, doesn't want to fight. You know, he really does want to try to have a damn day where he could sit by the waters, fish, relax, just enjoy life without worrying about somebody always coming after you. Now, of course, yes, we know that, you know, the kingdom of Eternia, and the king and queen and the prince, yes, you know, they're still kind of targeted in a way, but not as much as He-Man himself. So now that you are permanently He-Man and you don't even want, wouldn't you want to be Adam? Wouldn't you still want to be the man that, my God, can I have some kind of peace? But just to give up the title and the moniker and everything, as this means nothing, and Adam means nothing. It's like, I couldn't stand it more than anything. Just this thought of just permanently King He-Man. It's like, you didn't deserve it. You don't have that right. You know, if Adam would have never got the sword to become He-Man, it would be Adam who'd be the king. It's like, oh, but now because I can become super powerful He-Man, I'm going to be King He-Man. It's like, but you don't deserve the title. It doesn't make sense.
It's just lazy, piss poor writing, and people who had no business writing stories for He-Man didn't get the character. They don't get proper storytelling, and they certainly didn't get the dynamic of what makes the secret identity alter ego idea of Prince Adam and He-Man in such an important piece of the mythology. You know, they're forgetting that everything that He-Man does in Diamond Ray Disappearance, Price of Deceit, Secret of the Sword, Disappearing Dragons.
I have a question. Question from actually JSP in the chat room, which I'm glad he's saying this, because JSP, remember your question later when we discuss She-Ra and a certain thing about her. He says, do you guys remember in which episode that Man-at-Arms referred to He-Man as Adam? I don't. I'm passing that to Tyler. He's the Filmation expert. I do not know that.
I mean, I've heard him bring it up in, like, saying, it almost like not calling He-Man Adam directly, but making reference to Adam, you know, in front of He-Man. You know, obviously he's talking to Adam / He-Man, but not saying it in such a direct way. I can't place off the top of my head which episode that would have been in. I mean, because they have a lot of discussions throughout the series, you know, with Adam and Man-at-Arms and Man-at-Arms and He-Man, and making references, you know, to, you know, the alter ego. And, but I can't say specifically right off the top of my head. I apologize for that. I can't name a specific episode. I'd really have to stop and think, and I don't want to waste too much time of, like, just in the face of me, just so it would, you know, bud.
Yeah. Okay. No, but yeah. So like I said, that's just, I mean, it's the main thoughts behind the whole thing of King He-Man, which when we were doing this, I mean, when this was going to be a topic, you know, something else was just flowing through my head, which, okay, I can understand marketing-wise, but okay, let's think of a very known phrase and name and title. She-Ra, Princess of Power. Have you ever really thought thought about that, sat and thought, because, okay, I know the toys, maybe they wanted to call it, and it was a way of tagging, you know, targeting young girls, and she's the princess of power, and she is the power. But I was like, but again, now when you think and you look towards the cartoon, Adora is the princess. It's not She-Ra. So She-Ra has this title of Princess of Power, which in Secret of the Sword at the end, we know that He-Man says, you know, She-Ra, Princess of Power. Like, I guess he can call her that because he knows, all right, well, it's Adora and kind of this. But still, even She-Ra should not be the princess. It's Adora that's a princess. But I can't name the exact episode. I know it was said. Maybe somebody in the chat room might even know it. I know James Etock would. But there was a particular episode of She-Ra where Hordak called She-Ra Princess of Power. And I was thinking, all right, you don't know that She-Ra and Dora are the same person. So, and, but still, She-Ra's not the princess. But where are you getting the name princess? You've never heard anybody call her princess. So why is it She-Ra is the Princess of Power? It should be Adora who Adora is the princess. But somehow She-Ra's got this moniker. And I think, obviously, maybe it started from the toys first. I don't know, but I'll pass it to you. But it's something to think about. It's like, She-Ra's not the princess, it's Adora.
This is Joe just digging for plot holes. When,
well, no, not just plot holes. It's something to really make you think. It's like, you know, that's
It is that much of a brain buster, though. It's strictly just trying to work in the title. Plus the name She-Ra, Princess of Power, it's catchy. It rolls off the tongue. It gets your attention. Yes, breaking it down like that, I think to the audience, yes, we know it. She's really the princess of Eternia, but to it just it's a nice title to give to her. She's not addressed by that by the rebellion or anybody else. The Horde doesn't address her as the Princess of Power.
Just Hordak that one time did call her that.
And then of course He-Man when he raises his sword at the end of Secret of the Sword.
Yeah,
it's a way of ringing in the title, and nothing more to it. You know, it's something that that's where I feel like Joe gets a little too technical with this, and I'm guilty of getting very technical with stuff too. But I just don't see it as something that's like this doesn't make any sense. I mean,
so could you say it works? Obviously, it worked for the toys because I understood that, but I think in the cartoon,
the dynamics of the story, it wouldn't make sense for people to be calling instead of just saying, sure, here comes the Princess of Power. You know, it even though it sounds cool, you know, but logically, no, it doesn't make sense. But given that it's not used frequently enough to come off like, okay, people, the staff is clearly not paying attention to this idea that they're throwing in Princess of Power all the time here, that would be a problem. But since it doesn't happen that much, that's why I find it's something that's very dismissive. Like, not so much the point where you feel like, I don't think Larry DiTilio and Tom Tatarinowicz and the rest of the crew were paying too much attention. I'm like, it's just something I just think that it looks cool in the opening credits. Obviously,
it does.
Boys. You know, plus, Masters of the Universe is not mentioned much in the He-Man cartoon. It's brought up in reference, and James Etock has clarified that as well, that, you know, when Skeletor refers to himself as Master of the Universe or in Like Father, Like Daughter, He-Man refers to Skeletor as, so this is the Master's Unstoppable Army, referring to Skeletor and the crew. You know, and then also in, I was going to say,
I know they did it in a lot of the mini comics.
Colossus Awakes already said that with I Master the Universe. But it's one of those things where it's just briefly mentioned, but then it's dropped altogether. Oh, Diamond Ray Disappearance. When Skeletor summons, you know, I'll summon our wars from around the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of looking at all of these villains are from all over the universe. You know, masters of the universe, as we all know, Merman's master of the oceans, Evelyn's master of
a. And you're right. A way of like introducing, since the cartoon just coming out, kind of introducing the title from the toys. Yeah.
It's only mentioned briefly, and then it's dropped. And if you go and watch a video on James E. Talk's YouTube channel. He addresses this whole idea of the Master of the Universe title being mentioned, and then it's just dropped immediately after a few episodes. It's not mentioned
in which
much.
In which that's why it's good that it wasn't much in, you know, She-Ra, because I wouldn't have wanted to hear it. But Zentron in the chat room, which I'll have to check these out, but He said she refers to herself as Princess of Power to Prince Zed and a few other times. So I guess there was a couple more, but you're right. If they just would have kind of not had it been said much, I guess it would have worked. But even hearing her use the moniker, it's like, okay, here we go. It's almost like we're talking with King He-Man. It's like, Shiva, you aren't the princess. It would be Adora. But I guess, like you said, it's in the tagline of the series. It's for the tagline of the toys. So I get it, but if they were really trying to focus on it and say it, it definitely would have probably annoyed me as much as King He-Man, because it's like how I said, He-Man ain't the king, she's not the princess.
You'd have been every right to be upset about that. It's like when they you know, a title for a movie makes no sense if it's you know, I was trying to think of an example of a particular movie where it shouldn't. It's just like the name of, or like for example, if Obi-Wan Kenobi was to mention in New Hope, I fought Darth Vader in the first Star Wars. I'm like, that makes no sense. You're just forcing the title in the movie just so you can sit there and say Star Wars in Star Wars. And not once in all the Star Wars films did they say Star Wars.
Wait a second. You know what? He said that? I didn't even know that. He actually said that?
No.
Oh, I thought you did say he said it. I was like, wait, what? I got confused. No, oh, God, thank God. You scared me.
Point. I'm making a point that if Obi-Wan Kenobi were to tell Luke in history, you know, in the first, instead of the Clone Wars, which was a cool idea until they actually made a movie of it, you know, it's like, you know, I fought, you mean your father fought Vader in the first Star Wars? Like, okay, now you're trying to.
Okay, now I caught you. Okay.
And that's why, even though Masters of the Universe is such a bold, epic title, you don't need to mention the show until 2000X comes along and they deem themselves the Masters of Armored Reconnaissance Duty here, Man-at-Arms. Well, stick it up your ass, Duncan. You know, it just doesn't sound right. You know, obviously, it does come off as a bit pretentious and a little egotistical, but it also feels like you guys are missing the point. You know, the show is called He-Man and the Master Universe because it's about the entire group of evil and heroic warriors that encompasses the whole world that are masters of what they do. They're not deeming themselves as like the Fantastic Four and the Masters. Like, no, you don't get it. It just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, because so, beyond even the early
point before, and it just felt like you're trying to work the title in, and you know what? You're falling on your face every time, and I hope you keep falling and bust your chin open really good, where you get this nice big cut open gash here, and you put some salt on that wound there too, because all you're doing is just smacking us all in the face here. Like, oh, the Masters, I get it now.
Yeah, because like I said, in the early mini-comics, they did say Masters of the Universe, you know, in the early mini-comics, but it wasn't a whole lot in the other mini-comics. Not saying it didn't pop up in some of them, but the early ones, definitely.
We're not going to, you know, that's the title of this story. This mythology is called Masters of the Universe. We don't need the same thing with, like, Star Wars. And I was trying to think of another great idea of like a movie where the title, you know, says it all, but they don't use the title in that movie.
Yeah, because I was gonna say there's one I love that they do say it a lot, actually, where they, you know, the Goonies, they say that a bunch, yeah, but
not mentioned a whole lot. Like, they, even when they mention it, you realize like they are called, like, kind of like us, Mikey, the Goonies, you know, rejects. But and then they don't say it till a little bit later on in the movie, you know. Unless you watch like the deleted scene where they stop by the convenience store and
yeah, oh, and then Troy remembered yelling, yeah, "Hey, you Goonie,
Goonie!"
Yeah,
but I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But you almost feel like a title that's as ambiguous as Master of the Universe is, that's just that you're setting what the scale of this show. It doesn't need to be mentioned in the show. You don't hear the sorceress, you know, mention Masters of the Universe and stuff like that. You don't hear, you know, I mean, yes, there are examples of Princess of Power, but it's a very small number of times mentioned in that series, you know, and it wouldn't make sense, Joe. I mean, I agree with Joe. It does not make sense to shoehorn the title Princess of Power anytime She-Ra makes an appearance in front of King Gruff. Or, you know, going to visit Light Hope, where she decides to stop at Devlin again, you know.
Right.
Just, you know, I can't think of too many other examples. I think I made my point.
No, you did. So that's just, like I said, it's just something to just mull over and think about. Something you usually don't hear discussed. That's why I thought it'd be fun to discuss. Not saying, you know, Joe is completely right or Tyler is. It's just one of those things. We like doing a little rant.
And if he were to say, well, here on the New Adventures, you know, like, you know, or constantly referring to what they're dealing with, me and the Guardians are going on some new adventures, you know, or just, you know, just finding some way to shoehorn new adventures into every, getting tongue-tied. It wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, it would be like almost like He-Man referring to himself as he does in the intro, where I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Imagine he comes up to somebody who's like, I am He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe, every time he encounters an enemy.
Let's not, you know, inflate He-Man's ego here, you know. He's humbled, but he knows there's nothing on this planet that can stop him. You know, if he's able to lift Castle Grayskull up by himself, he may struggle here and there, but we wouldn't have much of a story if he wasn't struggling with sea creatures and various hordes of robots.
And yeah, you gotta have
strangle him, and he just, like, can knock the hell out of him.
That's what I said. You gotta have your hero at some time be met with, you know, something that can stop them. Otherwise, it's like, okay, they win so easily every single time it comes out. That's why you want to see them in a dire situation. Like, oh God, how's he gonna get out of this? It makes for a better show when you see.
Plus, I'd like to think of it, you know, even though whereas He-Man, he's got the strength and intelligence, Skeletor's evil and sorcery is the equivalent of He-Man's strength and intelligence. You know, Skeletor's very smart too. But you just feel like these guys are constant equals, you know, that they're always going to be doing battle. It's that epic storyline like you have with a lot of great superheroes and supervillains. You know, the Fantastic Four will always be duking it out with Doctor Doom. You know, Spider-Man will always be taking on Dr. Octopus. I'd say Green Goblin, but I hold true that Norman Osborn died and so did Harry, so I can't use that too much.
But, you know, it's everything you're saying there. That's what I've always said about, you know, cartoons, comics. That's what makes them so great is because obviously they're not real life people like you and I that can age, you know, and just go away and look older. They're timeless. They're supposed to be eternal. They can always have these battles and you always see them one way or another coming back to fight Lex Luthor and like you said, Kingpin and whoever else it may be from whatever universe. And sure, we know that they've had them age in all sorts of Marvels, DC, whatever, but they usually bring it back at some point.
Get away. I mean, they've done it with Kingdom Come, and they've done it with a wide variety of other stories and alternate universes. This could work with He-Man, too, which is why I've always been behind the idea of Hero. Hell, I got a whole wall dedicated to the idea of Hero.
Right.
So I like the idea. It can work. And a much older, you know, kind of gruffer, but very intelligent. And I almost felt like the idea of a King Adam. God, I better not get used to saying King He-Man. Ugh. But the idea of a King Adam and raising Dare and then knowing one day he's going to have to pass on the responsibility of the power of Grayskull and he'll be deemed Hero, that alone should tell that he knows what his son is going to be gearing up for at some point in his life. That at some point his son will have to take on this responsibility. As a father, knowing what He-Man has gone through and with Prince Adam's troubles of dealing with dual identity, letting people down.
It makes for better options. Like you said, you could have a story that would entail around that, and then if they still had another ongoing one with just He-Man He-Man.
Yeah, keep the He-Man story going, the ever-going battle with He-Man, Skeletor, the Horde, and the Snake Man. But another storyline where he's retired, he is now ruling Eternia as a king. His wife, Teela, is residing in Grayskull in secret and raising Dare. You know, and you see him grow up as a child and you know, knowing as he's watching that, you know, one day his son is going to have to learn what it means to defend this palace, the meaning of Grayskull, that he may have to take lives at some point to defend, you know, the power of Grayskull, his mother, himself, friends, family.
That's what I liked with the little, if you will, taste of something different when you think about issue 13 of the Star Marvel comics, you know, back in the day when, you know, He-Man was supposed to have been dead and you've seen the future where Adam is now, like, you know, on the run, a lot of the other, you know, heroic warriors, but Adam has a beard. So you've seen Adam as being older. You've seen Clamp Champ look older. Teela is the sorceress, I believe, of Castle Grayskull at that time. So It was interesting, but like you said, if they could add side stories with one as one as the other, I'm into that. But sometimes when they just kind of like stick to one main storyline, disregard some other stuff, and create
Yeah,
things that just.
being clever by killing off certain characters, like, oh man, look how ballsy we are. We killed the sorceress. Like that god awful DC storyline where the sorceress is dead, Skeletor's rolling, but somehow he decides, I'm going to leave Prince Adam alive. And I know he's He-Man, hoping he'll come back and want to fight me again. Makes no damn sense. Sorry for the cussing. But it's just one of those things, like, you guys have no idea how to write He-Man. It's just like, why do they keep putting people in charge who really clearly don't have a passion for this property, but they'll hire any hack? Someone who just wants to make a name for themselves. They don't care what they do to this beloved property here. You know, just trying to get in the doorway so they can really get you, so they can write the Green Lantern Corps or whatever, and they don't care how they piss all over this. It
Yeah,
should
and
be.
yes, two things. One, yes, Chris Simpson, my mask is falling. It is. It's going down further and further. Sorry. And also, Adam Gabbert in the chat room said, "We." I mean, I know, but I want you to say who did the artwork in Backyou, Tyler, all on your wall.
Axel Jimenez did every bit of this. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 14 original illustration is, and I've got Kevin Sharp there, and I've got some more of his in my bedroom as well. But all this is all Axel Jimenez, all original ideas and artwork that I came up with for him to illustrate for me.
All right, there you go. And Axel does, obviously, as people have seen, amazing artwork.
And
And
I did work on the mini comics that feature King He-Man, and you
poor
know
Axel.
that
No.
makes it good, but it doesn't make King He-Man a plausible idea to be in the mini comics. So
Yeah.
if Axel hears this, I know sometimes on occasion he listens to the podcast, so I hope Axel doesn't take offense to that because Axel does
Oh,
make
I'm sure.
good.
No,
However,
I'm he
I
won't.
cannot get behind a King at He-Man idea. I cannot, and I will not support that, and I will not support the unnamed one, at least not the version that we were given in the Classics toy line, which I may use that for a future Unsolved Mystery because I do not buy the idea that it's a just an evil Orko, a Trollin, calling pulling this.
What a cat. You know what? To think about some of the,
God.
most hyped up things when people were thinking, oh man, what is this unnamed one going to be like? What's he going to look like? And they're like, oh, you better get ready. This is going to be, you guys, I tell you, not ready for this. And when they revealed the unnamed one, I remember just everybody was like,
Yeah.
what? Huh? That's it? I mean, talk about just, like you said, waiting for Survivor Series. What the hell's going to be in the egg? And here comes the gobbledygooker. You might as well say the unnamed one is the gobbledygooker of Masters of the Universe. What a just a letdown.
There, I'm like, I do not doubt that there are, obviously are evil Trollins, but I was sick and tired of this idea that all this extra emphasis on Tralla in the bios and mini comics, like, stop it! Tralla is a separate, like, off world. It has nothing to do with the ongoing struggle on Eterni. It's where Orko came from, and we have appearances here and there that involve Tralla or Trollins, and that's it. To sit there and say Overlord's a Troll and the source of hero comes from Tralla and all this other nonsense. It was, and that the person. And as I've gotten older, I do not really appreciate the idea of these great evil leaders of Skeletor, Hordak, and King Hiss. And Skeletor does, which just makes him the definitive bad guy. But for Hordak to answer to Horde Prime, as a kid, I thought it was cool. As an adult, I do not like the idea of Hordak answering to anybody. I see Hordak is a definitive, self-serving badass who does nothing, I mean, but answer to himself. And the same thing with King Hiss. Now, when I read the mini comic, The Powers of Grayskull, and it's mentioned that, the unnamed one who we serve, it was interesting, but I'm also like, I don't like the idea of King Hiss answering to anybody either. Like, these guys, they are the top of the food chain badasses. For them to answer to a higher power, can you really imagine Skeletor answering to a higher power or saying that he practices, black magic and evil sorcery to honor the god Oladipo, or
No,
Oladipo.
and see, that's the thing. You're right. See, when I look at all the factions, when you look at the Horde, when you look at Skeletor, and when you look at the Snake Men, These are all different factions. So when you have the main leader of each faction, you want to envision them as being the epitome of evil for that faction. So them answering to somebody else makes it seem like, well, now you seem less than whoever this is. So instead of making them answer to somebody, how about you just create an independent evil villain or another faction? Just like how when King Hiss and the Snake Man came up, bam, it worked. That's a whole new faction. There's a new leader. But like you said, when you start seeing people that tell them what to do and they have to answer them, it's like, eh. Like Horde Prime, I'll be honest, even though I know he was supposed to tell Hordak what to do back in the Filmation days, I just never felt him. Even as a kid, I just seen this giant hand that always reminded me of Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget. You never seen nothing. I didn't know who he was, and I didn't like the thought of Hordak answering to somebody else. It was just because I couldn't, you never seen him. And you wonder, is he really that big? Or is it just a big, a big mechanical arm that somebody could be controlling behind mist? Even though, because remember, when Grizzlor was going to present gifts for Horde Prime for his birthday, two neckties, one for each head. So it's like, okay, now we know that Horde Prime has two heads. So is he really this gigantic demon that's part robot and whatever else in two heads? Or could it be just something else? You never knew. But no, I don't like the thought of anybody answering to somebody else. I just would rather say, bring in a new big baddie. Somebody else completely separate. Just like when you have Shakoti. That's her own person. It's like, Shakoti, she's a badass. She's not answering nobody, and Skeletor ain't answering to her, vice versa. I like independent stuff like that. So, yeah.
It was an interesting idea. It was a fun mystery, and then it's something I'm sure me and Joe could actually dig into in regards to the storyline that we were getting and not the one that we did get with the mini comics, where it's just an evil trolling. Yeah, that's very, very original.
Sometimes these things.
I think that was the only figure that I got in the subscription that I left in the box.
Oh, really?
I think I took out the mini comic it came with so I could look at Axel's artwork. I put that figure back in the box, and I never took it out again. It's still in the box. I hated that figure. Decker and King Grayskull, I did take out of the box as well. I was just trying to, I'll put them somewhere in the back because I just disregard them. But I did take those out of the box. The unnamed one, I just thought it was so insulting because there was so much hype around getting the unnamed one because of the one mention in one panel in one of the last mini comics that fans have had fun discussing, and we get this very uninspired idea of an evil.
That's what I mean. When you have an anticipation, you're right. When you have anticipation for something and you're envisioning, I guess that's the thing. You're expecting something so amazing that it's just going to absolutely blow your mind. So the thought of, okay, like you said, way back when we were kids, we heard the name of the unnamed one. Guess you never really thought twice. It's like, okay, we heard it, but I guarantee he wouldn't have looked like that if they ever showed him back in the day. He would not have looked like some goofy evil trolling. So you hype it up and you give us this. It's just like, okay, the thing, just as a quick example, like everybody's like, I wear a mask. Take off the mask. It just ruins the mystery of things. Because here's the other thing. Think of Horde Prime. We've never seen him. And I would love to get the reactions from the fans in the UK. Because remember, they have their UK stories with Masters of the Universe, Princess of Power, and New Adventures. And they showed their version and vision of what they thought Horde Prime would look like. Now, I remember fast forward years later to when here comes the internet and eBay, and I ordered some of these magazine comics from the UK, and I see Horde Prime. I was like, it's kind of cool, because for me, I was like, hey, he looks like a Sektar or something, because I love the Sektar's figures. But some people didn't know that it came from the UK comics, and when they seen the Horde Prime figure, the one with the head based off of the UK version, and then the other head, which is based off of a background image, which was not actually Horde Prime's head, but it was like something in back of it or some nonsense, and then they took a red Hordak head and put it on there or something.
I haven't covered up by everything because that's not Horde Prime. If anything, I look at him as like an Imperial Guard for Hordak.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's different. So that's what I mean. Even Horde Prime, it's like, people have always wondered, what does he look like? So in the UK, I wonder what the fans thought initially when it was first shown to them. If they thought, dear God, what is this crap I'm looking at? This is what Horde Prime looks like? You wonder if they would have been just as mad as others are when they see other reveals. Like I said, for me, it just kind of worked when I got the comics years later. It's like, different. But that's what I mean. You're making this imposing sounding character and you get this. And it's like nothing ever will live up to somebody's expectations, you know, because we have such, I guess, high, you know, expectations and visions in our head of what we think.
And again, you know, when you have a character that's presented as literally larger than life and you shrink him down to a figure that's the same size as everybody else.
It's like, man.
It doesn't work. We didn't need a Hulk Prime figure. I didn't think we needed a Light Hope figure. Now, Light Hope was very well received with his design and everything. But me personally, I'm like, I don't need a Light Hope figure. I don't need a Horde Prime figure. There are characters that transcend physical form, essentially, you know? Especially Light Hope. I don't need a figure of this beautiful rainbow being.
I didn't like that. Yeah.
You know,
I didn't want to see it. I did not like the Light Hope figure at all. I just, like, you're right. I always seen this mystical light and this force and energy, and it was just like, you know, you felt like you're in this just great presence of a spirit, of something very powerful. That did it for me, but, well, that's, all right, well, there. That's our rambling about all that, because you know how we do it. We love sidetracking, but that's what the show is about. It's good. So we'll do our discussion now on the last part of the DC miniseries, which will then go into Tyler's question he said he has for me, and then, of course, questions from you guys. But now we finally got, and just to let you know, no, this is not how Joe takes care of his comics. This is an extra one I got in a lot. My issue 3 is in good condition, so I figured, why take that out of the jacket when I can just take out this one that's all kind of ripped and everything? But
I don't have a hard copy in front of me here, so I've had to review it online. So you'll have to, because I didn't get the third copy out of storage, so.
Okay, well, as we know how it left off, they finally got, you know, all 3 talismans, and they can go for now the 2 halves of the Power Sword, which will become 1, and then Skeletor, of course, will, you know, become, controls Castle Grayskull and Eternia, but it starts out with Zodak. Zodak finally figures, okay, now he's always, you know, in the background, never does anything, but he's going to have to intervene this time. Because if Skeletor does gain control of the Power Sword, it's not only going to destroy Eternia, it would destroy, like, one of the universes. Because I noticed he didn't say, like, all of the universe, like, the universe. It's mentioned so many times. This might have been the 2nd or 3rd time within the series. Like, you remember in the other issue when Merman, he loves his home world of Eternia. That's why he'd like to control it. And he says, unlike Skeletor, who's from another world or the multiverse. And they bring that up in this again, because you find out the one who's behind, who's been pulling everybody's strings, is Daemon, however you want to say his name. But it was that one demon I referred to earlier in one of the other issues. Well, he's the one that's been, like, setting up traps, doing things. So Zodak's basically letting He-Man know, why would it be Skeletor that's doing it? If Skeletor is the one that's sending you on the mission to get the get these talismans and get the Power Sword from him, why would he create all this, you know, stuff in the way? But it's Daemon, the one that's doing it. And he even, and at one time when he encounters Skeletor, he likes to let him know that this is my world that I want to conquer. You know, like he wants him to go somewhere else or send him to somewhere else, because you find out Skeletor has destroyed, well, maybe, I don't know about destroying the actual planet itself, but he's went through many worlds through the multiverse that he's conquered. And, like, you know, I don't know if Skeletor basically kind of said, you know, destroyed billions of people and took over so many worlds, but this is the Skeletor that I've told you before. Like, when somebody says, given the choice, would you want the Skeletor that's from another dimension that's just hell-bent on conquering, destroying, and gathering all the power he can? Or would you rather be blue-skinned Keldor or become Skeletor? No, I'm going to stick with this Skeletor. This is my kind of Skeletor.
Mine too.
So, it's all the way. This is just pure evil. I don't want to know origins. I just want to know this is a demon from another dimension that is coming everywhere. And now he's set on Eternia and getting these power swords, because he knows this, the source of this power is something stronger than he's ever felt before. Once he gets this, I mean, it's basically over. But no, Zodak, he finally intervenes and he lets He-Man know, you know, like, with these 3 talismans, it can basically take you now right where you need to go. But within doing it, like, when he uses these 3 talismans, it summons Zoar the Falcon, who takes them and creates this, it's like a portal. In a second, I was like lost. I was like, now wait, what's going on? Is Zoar the only one that can open this dimensional portal, which will take, you know, He-Man, Man-at-Arms, Stratos, all of them into it? Or, you know, that's the part where I got confused. It's, you know, just how sometimes they'll do the storytelling, but I think That's what they got from it. Which then takes them, I think, I don't know if that was when they went directly to Castle Grayskull, because then you see the other parts with Skeletor and Daemon, or Daemon the Demon. Where you, every time I say that, I think of Daemar the Demon. That's why I try to watch how I say Daemon.
Oh, hell, it's a He-Man podcast. You can get away with calling him Daemar if you want, just for the hell.
Yeah, because I was like, I think I know what's going to happen at some point. But no, even Skeletor finds out about, you know, Daemon, and then Daemon's the one that lets... They both, like, in a way, played each other, because Daemon thought he was using Skeletor the whole time to get to these, but Skeletor basically outsmarted him and knew that Daemon was doing that, so he outsmarted him. But I'll pass it to you with some of the thoughts, but... No, it was kind of cool to see how when everything started going at Grayskull, some things were, like, for me, left open-ended, like with Manny Faces when he was outside of Castle Grayskull. Yeah.
Which I just took that as, like, look, we've got this other character we're working in. Because Triclops and Trapjaw don't show up in this miniseries, but Manny Faces is part of that lineup. So almost you kind of wonder if Manny Faces, when they're doing this miniseries, was probably like the one of the few newer figures that was being brought to their attention, because he's the only member of the next year's cast of characters. Because Ram Man's not featured in here, I don't believe.
No, he's not. Yeah. I don't think I've seen him. No.
Yeah, I mean, in any of the first or second...
Oh, none of the issues. No, Ram Man wasn't in any of these issues. Three
character from that wave of characters that shows up in this book, which just kind of makes you feel like that was a character that had already been pretty much well finished in development, and they suggested, can you work him in somehow? And it makes sense. I mean, not as the most plausible way, but to have Manny Faces, like the narrator's even telling you, he's showing up at Grayskull. He's not quite sure why he's there, but resides there until you come to realize that he shows up with Beast Man, and Skeletor knows of his alternate personality of becoming a monster and uses the power sword to unleash the beast side of Manny Faces' personality to attack He-Man. So it's just trying to work this new character into the story, but it still works because we're still going back to that whole idea of Skeletor taking control of Manny Faces' alternate personality as a monster and using it for his own purposes, which we've seen in the mini comic and in the Filmation series. It's a storyline, and in hell, in 2000X, when Beastman took control of Manny Faces. That's a storyline. It's been used a lot, but damn it, I like it a lot. I like that idea. Do it once, but don't do it again. But it's a fun way of introducing Manny Faces in this series, because it's been done quite well.
It was the thing that kind of, like, got me in a way was, remember, Castle Grayskull, the power of Grayskull is what pulled him into there. Like you said, it was like it was meant for something, but I was thinking, it wasn't Skeletor that pulled him in, I don't believe, from what I remembered. It was just Grayskull that brought him in, but then, of course, like you said, Skeletor then uses the monster.
I took that as, like, the narrator is telling he doesn't know why he's showing up, but obviously Skeletor is responsible for bringing him there, at least from my perspective. Like, Manny Faces doesn't quite know, almost as if, like, Skeletor knows, I've got to get Manny Faces here. I will just, you know, use some telepathic magic of some kind to summon him here, and then when the time is right, I will bring him and Beastman in once I've gained access to Grayskull here and use his monster strength. I mean, I'm just coming up. It's not...
No, yeah, it's good. Like you said, it's just...
It's open-ended.
It is open-ended, because you're right. I mean, I can understand how he might have got there. I remembered I kind of got a little confused of why he got sucked in, but all I know was what was kind of cool is when they all got sucked into Castle Grayskull, you know, He-Man, Man-at-Arms, Stratos, Teela, and of course He-Man, there's like all these doors that were like presented in front of each one.
I love that, because it really builds up to the tagline of the box. Fortress of Mystery and Power, you know?
Yeah, I like that, and I think that's because it, like, plays...
Really cool to have them running into all these traps in this castle. I'm like, that's what you kind of expect to be running into in Castle Grayskull. Unless you are well aware of what's in this castle, even the heroes are going to fall into all the mysteries of the castle, because it's pretty much left, you know, no one's in here. If you break it in to this castle, you better be ready for anything.
Exactly. And what I like is it seemed like I thought, at least the way I took it, that the castle is messing with maybe parts of their heads of maybe some ways, either things they like you know, are known for, or fear, meaning like when Stratos opens the one door and he doesn't know, you know, what's around, he starts flying, and what happens with flies sometimes, boom, they land in a spider web.
Yeah.
And he's entangled in a spider web. Teela, she ended up in some kind of maze because, you know, Teela usually knows where she's going. She, you know, she, you know, is, you'd think that's like maybe a way of screwing with her head. Like, okay, you're always knowing where you're going, what you're doing, but now you're stuck in a maze. You know, like you have no clear path of where to go, what to do. Like, you know, she's not used to that. She's strong headed, as you know, in this, very strong headed and a strong warrior. She knows what she's doing. Man at arms. I like that he got presented with a whole bunch of weapons in front of him because he's, you know, the master with all these different weapons and everything. But he just, what was weird about Man at Arms is he just mysteriously poof, disappeared. And I was like, all right. So I'm waiting for him to come back later. He never did, though. Now, Teela, she's getting tired going around that maze. Like, I have gone everywhere. I keep going to the same spot. But then she finally, boom, she catches what's going on, and she busts through the bottom of the floor. She figures, if I can't go around to get the hell out of here, maybe I can go downwards. And when she goes downward, boom, she's encountered with Skeletor. But, so, yeah, he, you know, I mean, as you know, Skeletor is good. You know, he does get that sword. He does get the power. That's when, like you said, he brings in Beast Man finally to pop up. And then Manny Faces and uses the monster mode, which I don't know if you noticed. I like the look of Manny Faces in this with this crazy kind of like, yeah, it's different. It's like a weird kind of helmet in this dome. It's like covered with glass that's in front. So I thought that was a unique look. But of course, even Manny Faces, as He-Man kind of knocks him back and, you know, talks about, of course, him with his power vest. I don't even think we've seen Manny Faces no more. But no. But when He-Man gets into a battle with Skeletor, it, not only to show what we've seen and, you know, eventually seeing some of the other, like the record books with the whole thing with the trap doors and moving the, you know, the chair and stuff. But in this one, Skeletor, like, does the trap door thing where He-Man's going to fall down. And Teela grabs a spear, throws it, He-Man catches it, and as he's going down, it stops him from all falling in the hole, and he flips.
The classic commercial.
That's what I was.
Because it's been so long since I've looked at these comic books.
And that's what I was going to say.
Old vintage commercial with that beautiful animation of
by Filmation, by the way. Yep, and Filmation did that commercial, by the way. But that's what I thought of. I was like, wait a second. So when the commercial, you know, came out, they did the same thing with the whole thing: throw the spear, catch this, boom, zip up. I loved it. But
that whole trap door thing, when Skeletor's sitting on the throne, He-Man comes in unaware of this trap door that Skeletor's figured out. I just love seeing the use of that in some of these older stories. Hell, like in one of my favorite Golden books, Sword of Skeletor, when Skeletor pulls the rug out from under He-Man and he falls to the trap door to encounter He-Man. But it's just still fun to use the throne room as it got this trap door and you don't know what you're going to fall down to some certain doom. But it was just so cool to see that. Guys like, they're like, oh man, I can't wait to bring that up. That was so cool to see.
That was the same thing. I thought the exact same thing because that lost commercial, I don't think that was anything we ever seen as kids. That was something that, you know, right. So to see it, I was like, damn cool. But yes, towards the end, you see that, yes, Zoar the Falcon gets the sword away from Skeletor. They defeat Skeletor. But they kind of let this open-ended. Like, the last paragraph is the goddess saying, ah, but first I seem to recall some of your allies, you know, allies wait beyond. Yeah, in rather compromising positions. And shall we see to their needs, my friends? And it has a question mark because, like you said, Stratos, we see no more of him. You don't know what happened to him. Man at Arms, and of course, even Manny Faces.
Yeah.
But what was good, and this was not me. There was, no, hold on. What I like is there's a letters section towards the end of this comic where people would write in. And I always like when people will like mention certain things like, this is, remember, way back in, you know, 82, whatever the hell this was. This is 80 or 83. This came out November 3rd, February 1983. But one of the persons said, dear sirs, Masters of the Universe 1 was great. The story was fine and the art was incredible. Alfredo's inks really complimented George's pencils. It's a shame this is only a mini series. And then the people writing the comic said, thanks for the compliments and the beautiful drawing accompanying your letter. As for there being only a miniseries, read on. And then the next person will ask a question about like things that were going on and say, well, this shouldn't happen and this shouldn't happen. But then their response was, Nice try, but no dice. DC has produced a special series of mini-comics that will be packed in with a whole new group of Masters of the Universe heroes and villain toys. In one story, The Tale of Teela, you'll discover that Teela is a mystical extension of the goddess. But I like that you were finding out stuff in this, you know, comic that, wow, there's going to be more? So they were talking about all those ones that we know Mark Texera did the drawing for, which you did start finding out. But, you know, I like looking back. If you guys never have, and if you have this or you haven't looked in a while, look at the letter section in the back. It's kind of fun just to see what, you know, kids wrote as, you know, or anybody was writing for about Masters and inquiring stuff.
That I think that's probably the best of the miniseries is the third part.
It was.
Because I like seeing, exploring the mystery aspect of Grayskull, and everybody's kind of running off doing their own thing and dealing with the castle's powers in their own way.
Yeah.
And combining the power sword and everything, Zodak getting involved, seeing elements of the castle being used and things like that. It's a fun, I mean, the whole miniseries is good, but that third part, it's a fun ride, and you're like, God, man, this is, and you know, there's morons at Sony just are not doing their homework at all, and they keep hiring people who don't, you know, give a rat's ass about He-Man. They'd rather do battle suits for Teela and nonsense like that. So,
and this is just, like I said, it was a beautiful three-part miniseries, and this hasn't been released in any volumes by Dark Horse yet. They haven't done these type of comics yet, have they?
No.
That would be great.
Dark Horse did, of course, you know, Marvel has the Star comics, DC's got these. You've got both of the flagship companies have dabbled in He-Man comic books. So, kind of makes you wonder, you know, how is that going to work? You know, does Marvel still hold on to the rights to Star at all? Like, do they hold all that? Because they did Thundercats, you know, they did Muppet Babies and Droids.
They did Sectars, and they did Sectars too.
Yeah, so they did a bunch of 80s toy lines, you know, Marvel and Star did. So, I don't know. Anything's possible, you know.
It'd be great to have all of these, because, like I said, there was the, you know, Superman versus He-Man one. There was the preview comic that was in one of the earlier DC comics. There's this three-part series. And like you said, if they were able to do Star Marvel, along with all the Golden Books, everything else. But, I mean, it would just make for an amazing another volume of stories that fans would probably love to see again if they never had.
Need to be, I don't think all the Golden Book stories from the soft cover Super Adventure books and the hardcover books, they all need to be one giant collection. All
It'd be great. It'd be great. It'd be the Golden Collection. But, yes, it would be great.
Yeah, to have all that accessible, boy, that would be very, you look at all of them online, but to have a nice big hardcover edition and to have all those stories accessible, all this comic book accessible, you know, even the puzzle artwork or coloring book artwork, I mean, that needs a book of all the various beautiful drawings and illustrations and paintings from the puzzles and all those Golden Book coloring books.
Yes, they're beautiful. I mean, they have beautiful covers. Not only that, even sometimes, like, in the interior pages of some of the coloring, sticker books, paint with water, there's beautiful pieces. I mean, everyone's a piece of art. Some of them, yes, maybe are just done real quick, but some are amazing. So, yeah, that's just something to keep in mind. But before we open it to you guys in the chat room to ask us any questions you want, I'm waiting to see what Tyler had that he was going to say.
I'd come up with this. It's not a grandiose idea, but it's a fun thing of, you know, we take pride in this show of trying to help educate people that there's much more to this series, and it's not just, you know, toys and things like that. And obviously there's a lot of people out there who are uneducated and uninformed and trying to pass off what their half-assed attempts of claiming they know something about He-Man when they really don't. And you've got people who are interested in He-Man coming back to the fold, and then they see these morons and think, oh, so that's what really happened. And I almost feel like, you know what? You know, people need to be informed of, you know, if you want to know what this character's really like, you need to look at this and this and this. So what I'm throwing to you is that if you were to introduce a new fan or someone who's been away for a while or someone who's like, you know what, I like what you have there. Can you tell me more about this? Like, what's this guy about? Give me three stories. It could be from any of the canons. It could be all from the cartoon, all mini comics, whatever. Three quintessential stories that represent the best interpretations of Skeletor. And what I'm suggesting here is, I might try this each week with you. Each week be a different character. Like next week could be Evil Inn. What are the three quintessential best stories of Evil Inn to help a newcomer see what Evil Inn is really about? Is it three episodes of Filmation? Is it an episode of Filmation, a mini comic, and episode 2000X? Is it a Golden Book storybook? I mean, but it had to be three quintessential versions that you would recommend a new person to the fold. They wanted to know more about Too Bad. What are the best three sources of media that would best interpret the character of Too Bad? So my question to you, three forms of media that best describe what Skeletor is really about. It doesn't have to be all the same. It could be all cartoons. It could be all mini comics. Whatever you feel would best describe the top level of badass that Skeletor really is.
That's a great question. One that immediately comes to mind is, well, it's from a canon that some people pick on, but it is Frank Langella's portrayal of Skeletor.
That's a no-brainer, though.
No, it is. It's a no-brainer, but I mean, he portrayed it so well of how evil can be, and you didn't have to feel any sympathy or wonder of any origins for that particular version of Skeletor. Now, I know many fans ain't another, you know, a big, big fan. If I can't, you know, if I was to find a certain episode, I have to find it. But I did like, even though the idea of Keldor, I told you, I don't like, I did like the evil feel of MYP Skeletor. If there's a particular instance where he did something, it's not immediately, I guess, flashing in my mind. I guess some of just the power was, I liked, which others hated, is when, yes, we know Merman was crushed and, you know, made to stone from Snakeface looking at him. But the part that people hated, which I loved how when Skeletor got back, you know, to his power with his staff and basically with a little wave of his hand or Havoc staff, bam, Merman was brought right back like nothing, because it showed, damn, that's how powerful Skeletor is. So that is something that immediately came to mind as an act of power, and I would look out for this guy, which I hated how they just kept having him just getting taken over and crap happening to him in MYP, but that was one. But see, the other one is, like, I liked how Filmation started with him, because he felt evil as hell. I mean, he felt very evil until it started got hammed up in the later seasons.
But, you know, I mean, obviously not every MYP episode was a classic.
Not every one, yeah.
But that's the whole point of it, is that you want to point people in the right direction that, like, this episode got it right, whether it's all MYP, all Filmation, or a mixed bag. You want to verify that, you know what, if you thought Filmation was silly, watch this.
Yeah, because the it's an act sometimes. Even if, obviously, yes, you know he gets defeated every episode, a certain act he does is memorable. When he was able to get the Korodite fashioned and put that onto his, you know, chest.
And after my own heart here.
Yeah, and when he says, now I have the power. But when, you know, when he did that, I was like, oh my God, he is now going to go toe-to-toe with He-Man and maybe be just as strong as him. So those are three memorable moments of Skeletor that I guess if people want to see to know what this guy's like, those are three moments.
See, this was not planned. Joe had no idea he was asking this question, because Evelyn's plot, the live-action movie, and the book, the Sword of Skeletor, the Golden Book Sword of Skeletor, I would recommend those. And of course, there's a whole legion of great episodes where Skeletor played very well. But Evil Inn's plot, the movie, and that book, I'd say watch the movie, watch this episode, and read this book. And if you want to know what kind of character Skeletor is, these best depict him very well. Now, there's some good moments in NYP, but those are the three that come to mind for me that I just, from a visual standpoint and a storytelling standpoint, doesn't get any better than that.
I like your choices. I like that. No, it's fun. Yeah, it's something we can do every now and then. I like that.
The next one, I'll just let you know. I'll just spring it on you. Okay.
I like that, because there might be times I'm so put on the spot, I might not have an answer, but I like that. So,
well, I mean, what makes it a little difficult is that some characters were not given a whole lot to work with, like Jitsu. One appearance and very few, many comic appearances, and a couple appearances in some of the Golden books, and maybe a couple of background appearances in some of the UK books and stuff. Not a whole lot to work
Not
with.
A lot. You're right. Oh, I agree. So but first,
makes
oh, go ahead.
him doing what he does best. So
I like that.
Won't be as rich for some characters, but the whole point is to emphasize letting people know, and people who may stumble upon this and they look at it and watch it and they give us a shot and they're still like, you know, interested. Well, take this moment to pass it on to your friends. You know, you want them to learn more and take it seriously. And like some of these schmucks on YouTube and people at Sony, tell them to watch this, this, and read that, or watch all three of these, or whatever. The point is just to constantly educate people who are just either haven't gotten the point, have missed the point, or they really want to know more. And then we want to make sure that they know the best, that this stuff is treated just as seriously as anything else. It has its flops here and there, but what great superhero from DC to Marvel has not experienced bad writing, bad
art? Everybody has. No, you're right. Absolutely everybody has anything.
So, same thing with He-Man and She-Ra, you know. We'll also do this with She-Ra, you know. What are some of the best depictions of evil from Hordak? You know, what
sure.
best depict him, you know. So, it works all over. So I'm glad you liked that.
I did. That was good. No, I appreciate it. Thanks for asking that. And, well, before, like I said, now we're going to open it to you guys to ask any questions. I wanted to say hello to NightRunner53, who is in the chat room. Thank you for joining us. But any questions you guys want to ask, go ahead and ask. And while you're typing some down, there are a couple questions already here.
Okay.
Christopher Dahlberg asked me specifically, said, Joe, do you think there could be a market for Dark Horse to collect all the Sektar's books, like the read-along stories, hardcovers, et cetera, and, well, let's say even Star Marvel comics? You know, Christopher, As you know, I'm somebody who loves Sektars. I'm somebody that always tries to campaign for them. We know that Zika Toys has done the Kickstarter campaign, which they well exceeded and went over, so there's going to be a lot of cool miniature-like Sektars figures. It's such a unique market that you'd wonder, would enough people buy it? Like, since, you know, like, you think how they even try it with Masters, you know, they're thinking, okay, it's just being kept alive by us fans and online and making books, but they do sell from the passionate fans. I don't know if there's as many passionate Sektars fans. I would hope so. I mean, seeing as the Zika toys met their Kickstarter, you know, well above what they wanted, I myself would say I'd love it. And I know, Christopher, you would, but I don't know if it'd be something they'd want to go for, because they might think, oh, there's not enough fans. I mean, I don't know about you, Tyler. I would love it, but I don't know if there's enough fans that would warrant them doing it and selling enough books.
I mean, I like Sektars. I like Bucky O'Hare. Both of them have done some re-release. I think Bucky O'Hare got a kind of a small relaunch, kind of in similar fashion, I think. And, you know, I have, but me, I'm biased. I'm passionate about all these, from Visionaries to Supernaturals to the bigger ones like Silverhawks and Brave Star, and I love Bionic Six, and Sektars is another one. I mean, but yes, the fanfare for a lot of these toy lines, people do like it, but it's not in the big masses. Like, you almost feel like the vast majority of 80s toy collectors, if you show them like a picture, they may, okay, I kind of remember that. I remember that. But it's still not as thorough and as energetic as Transformers, G.I. Joe, He-Man, Thundercats, Turtles, you know. But there is love for all that stuff. I mean, there is, because we wouldn't be talking about it. They wouldn't be doing a Kickstarter for it. You know, it's just, and I was glad to hear that Hasbro had announced plans to do Visionaries again. I haven't heard anything else from that. I don't know if they've done anything else. I'm so out of the loop on a lot of that stuff. But I'd like to think that if you're given a proper presentation, you know, like if the Four Horsemen, I just like to use them because they've always done such a great job. The Four Horsemen are given an opportunity to work on Sektars or Brave Star or Silver Hawks, or they've done well, extremely well with Thundercats. They kicked ass with that one. It almost shows you that if it's presented in a very kick-ass way like that, I think you can get everybody's attention.
No doubt, definitely.
But if you're not going to put your best foot forward and say, look, we gave it our absolute best, it didn't take, okay, then obviously the market's not there. But if you go balls to the wall and throw this out there, and that this new relaunch of Bionic Six, and here is our version of Dr. Scarab and Glove and Jack to kind of help show you what we're going to do here, oh my God, you know, Bionic Six, I remember that. It looks awesome, you know. But unfortunately too, it's almost like, is it based on, are you getting it out there? Are enough people aware of it? Or is the fanfare clearly just not as much as you were hoping for? And hell, I have no idea. As much as like I would see people respond to things about Silverhawks, I have no idea if a Silverhawks relaunch would be successful simply because, you know, people may talk about very positively, but is there enough fans out there?
You know, sometimes it's like you said, certain people making these toys. If the Horsemen released Silverhawks figures and Sektars, people would lose their minds, and I think that'd be enough hype to definitely warrant maybe some of these books happening, indeed, if there's some kind of merchandise. But yes, just by, like I said, making my custom where I did Quicksilver and did the chroming and the removable mask and all that, and just seeing the reaction that got on my wall and from other people saying, I remember Silverhawks, I remember this, I remember... Yeah, I think the hype, if Little Joe can get that kind of, like, you know, response from a custom, I can only imagine if Four Horsemen, if they did it, people would just lose their minds. Same thing with Sektars. So, no, thank you for that question. It is a great question. And, okay, Third Triumvirate Studio says, do you think Sony was actually planning to do the Masters of the Universe movie, or were they engaging in a show of pre-production to maintain their film rights? Well, I know that runs out in 2019 anyways, but what do you think, Tyler?
I think they're just they're a bunch of, you know, idiots. I think that they've been doing a lot of talking. I'm sure it's almost like it's kind of the popular thing of the week, you know. Let's do something with that Masters movie we've been trying to get off the ground for a while. And it could be one of those things too where they're but it just makes them look incompetent when you keep hiring new people in and out to represent this movie. They come out and say, hey, check out the new logo. Check out this concept art of Battle Cat. Check this out. Check that. Oh, look, we've cast this guy as He-Man. Oh, look. I saw someone on Facebook today saying, well, apparently Channing Tatum is being cast to play in a He-Man movie. Who should play his alter ego? And I'm like, how the hell does this false information not only get responded, but there's but several comments to
it. And that's old. That was like 2-3 years ago when they first said Channing Tatum might be He-Man. It's like, will this go away?
I remember it was like an April Fool's joke. I can't
remember. Yeah, it was.
It was an April Fool's joke.
And it just won't.
You do know it's April Fool's. We're like, oh, thank God.
But the thing is, people don't. There was so many people that still were sharing. Joe, look at this. Joe, look at that. I was like, that was April Fool's. And then sometimes they were showing me months and months later. I was like, would you look at the date? It was April 1st. That was an April Fool's joke. It just won't go away. That's why I hate when they do that, because now everybody thinks it's going to happen, which leads to more stupid posts.
Completely incompetent. They're doing a Venom movie that's going to suck just because they've got the rights and they don't care if it's not quality. They've got the rights because they're morons and they're going to use it. Same thing with He-Man. However, it's clearly not important enough as making a Marvel movie. So I think at this point, I think they're just, you know, I mean, look, we are less than a month away from them starting to shoot a movie that has no final script, no director.
Tyler, remember what everybody says. It's happening this time, definitely happening this April. It is going to be shooting. So, yeah, get ready for not happening.
Just like fans who clearly have got all the experience in the world and how Hollywood works, and I don't, but I've done enough, you know, research and reading about behind the scenes, and like I have a pretty good idea of what's going on here.
We're just used to it, too. We've said this before. We're used to this happening for years and years. Yeah. So it's just
people who are just like, oh, but they know different. They've been reading new movie websites for more than a decade than you and I.
It's from experience. That's what we try to let everybody know. It's from experience, and I think more and more Masters of the Universe fans are seeing that, yes, this is just a cycle. It's the record that keeps spinning and playing the same song. It's not going to change. So, well, there's that, and thank you for that. Now, Adam Gabbert says, Joe and Tyler, I'm only speaking mini comics for Vintage Masters of the Universe. Which story do you consider as your favorite for reading? He says he likes the one with Stinkor. Well, I'm glad you did that, because I was going to say there's two I like, but I'm... because I love Clash of Arms, but I also...
Man, Clash... It's always going to be Clash of Arms.
Like I said, I love that. I love The Search for Keldor. Those are like two of the ones that I remembered as a kid reading so much, because there was so much action going on in both comics with the different, you know, whole list of characters and things that was going on. And one, you get to see, like you said, Fisto basically being the star of the comic, but then you see Whiplash, like not only Jitsu, but you see Clawful, but Whiplash being basically the star as the evil warrior leading that comic, because he could have killed Fisto, and it wasn't until He-Man shows up at the end to save the day with a pistol out of all things. What's that?
He-Man shoots a guy in the face.
Yeah, exactly, with his laser pistol, no sword in that. But then I think of Search for Kaldor, and I think of all the warriors that showed up. It's like you're seeing all these new evil warriors and then heroic warriors and so much going on. It's like, I'll be honest, I looked at and read probably Search of Kaldor more. So maybe just because of my connection with the toys and everything that kind of connected with that, I'll say the Search for Kaldor. I mean, I love damn Clash of Arms too, but I'll just go with Search for Kaldor.
I mean, yeah, Hordak's mini comic is mine, and I mean my second, and then Search for Kaldor is my third. So I mean, me and Joe, I mean, we've discussed it before. We do have intentions of going back and revisiting these, particularly Clash of Arms, and hopefully we have something very special lined up when we do go back and revisit that particular book.
All right.
But Clash of Arms will always be my forever favorite. Hell, I even had Axel do a illustration that was an homage to Clash of Arms featuring a wide assortment of characters. I mean, if you haven't seen it before, I posted on my Facebook, Axel's got it on his, it's on his DeviantArt, but it's the Clash of Arms motif with Movie Skeletor, Blade, Sorod, Ninjor, Tuvar, with Clan Champ and Lizard Man chained at the wrist, back to back, being facing down these evil warriors with the movie version of Castle Grayskull in the background. Movie Skeletor with his hand out like this, the kind of homage to like cool. Skeletor like this comic. So
that's cool. All right. Yeah. Well, JSP retracted one of his messages, which I thought I'm going to try to remember what he said before he retracted. I thought he said that when he were talking about the whole thing about He-Man being referred to Adam, I thought he said it happened in the arena. And it was like 5 minutes, 58 seconds into it where he said something like, you know, thanks for turning into He-Man, Adam. So when He-Man.
Yeah, that is right. Yeah. And because he's talking about we have no what to expect from Alm. Like, so, yeah, I mean, but I kind of just took that as, you know, it's not necessarily talking, you know, I know the scene he's talking about. Yeah.
Okay. No, all right. Well, see, I didn't offhand, but I tried. He said he accidentally retracted it. No problem, JSP. I'm trying to make sure I got to everybody. Chris Simpson, no blasphemy. He says Clash of Arms doesn't make sense. Oh, the blasphemy. We can't hear this from you, Chris Simpson.
I mean, I feel a hate crime coming on right now.
He's being banned from Fans of Power right now.
I find out that his is like, you know, well, my favorite is He-Man the Power Sword because the cool thing is like everything without Kyla's name attached to it.
Yeah, well, remember Chris Simpson because he said something. He's like, why didn't Skeletor have someone guarding the door? He-Man just walks in. No, He-Man blasted through on Stridor. He came bursting through those doors. So, hell, if there was somebody guarding it, they weren't going to be able to stop him. So,
He-Man riding on Stridor, I don't care where you're at. If He-Man on Stridor wants to get in, they're going to
block it. Exactly. Stridor was a strong son of a gun too, as we know. So yeah, nobody's gonna stop that mechanical horse and He-Man from coming through there. But no, we like razzing you, Chris Simpson. That was fun. Nightrunner 53 said it's crazy. Those were the two mentioned. Those are the ones I remember the most as well. Oh, it's cool, Nightrunner, that you well, yeah, that's what I mean. Search for Kaldor, Clash of Arms. Those are two of the best mini comics. And let me see. All right. Well, that was pretty much all the comments for now. So which is around the same time we usually almost wrap it up. So yeah, thank you for all the interaction, everybody. Again, every week when you do this, you give us questions, we'll answer them, and anything else you want to do. Just like I said, we always like having you be part of the show with us. So, Tyler, what do you have to recommend or anything else before we wrap this episode up?
Just seems logical why I haven't done it before, but if you enjoy me and Joe, our discussions, we also do another podcast once a week called Beyond Retro. If you enjoy discussions on classic 80s and 90s films, television shows, fads, video games, and things like that, we are joined by Nathan Kennedy. And the three of us sit down each week and discuss a particular movie, a series, or a wide assortment of classic retro stuff. And some of it kind of, you know, newer, but it's also retro-like as well. So if you enjoy your weekly dose of Fans of Power, but you like to hear more discussions from us, we do another one. You know, that's available on the Beyond Retro Facebook page, Beyond Retro YouTube channels as well, on Facebook as well. So if you like to hear us talk, you can hear us talk twice a week if you'd like, if you would prefer. So If you want to hear some more fun discussions about 80s related stuff, check that out as well. I also recommend checking out He-Man.org. I also post links to all the episodes on that website as well. Helps. That's where actually you had to use my research to revisit the third issue of the miniseries on the website. So that's if you don't have it, you can always go to that website as well. Check that out. Check out Axel Jimenez's artwork, Kevin Sharp's artwork, Joe Amato's customs, and I was trying to think. I highly recommend. I make it anybody that listens to this. You know what? If you know somebody who's moderately interested in He-Man, make it a point to put together three forms of media to help pique their interest in the show. And it doesn't have to be Skeletor, but make it a mission. As a listener of the podcast, if you listen to this frequently and you enjoy what we have to say, make it a mission this week. You know someone who's, you know, who could be interested in He-Man, or someone who's a little bit uninformed and you want to make sure you keep them on the right path. Put together a trifecta of the best of a He-Man or Skeletor or Evil Inn, or if they like kind of out there characters, put together the best of Trapjaw, you know, the best of Too Bad, or, you know, the best interpretations of Beastman or something like that. You know, it's, you know, spread the word, you know, let everyone know that, you know, it ain't all just a bunch of goofy Geico commercials and, you know, Family Guy making fun of the stuff, or, you know, or, you know,
I love Family Guy.
They're you know, really bad humor trying to, you know, make a name for themselves at the expense of this, you know, unbelievable mythology.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And also, I wanted to say, Third Triumvirate Studios in the chat room asked a question, but was already answered by somebody in the chat room, but asked if we have discussed the trailers for Cobra Kai yet on Beyond Retro. And we did last week's episode. Yeah. We did do that along with Karate Kid. So
touched on that. Yeah. So if you want to know what we thought, check out our Karate Kid episode of Beyond Retro. Just type in Beyond Retro Karate Kid. It's also on Podbean. If you like to download this and listen on your car ride home, Beyond Retro is available on there as well. So you've got Beyond Retro and Fans of Power both to download for audio purposes and view us both on YouTube as well. So,
yes. And I myself, if you ever wondered, I have an actual twin brother. He sounds just like me. He wears the same day mask and everything. He's the one that does Beyond Retro because he has like a cursing problem at times. That's not Joe Amato. So if you do listen to Beyond Retro and you hear anything that you're like, what is going on? That's not me. It's not me at all.
Joe's twin brother, Dennis.
Yes, there. Yes, Rocky Dennis. That's who I am. I don't know. But one person in the chat room has a movie quote in Zentron. And I guess I'll shoot it to Tyler, because what's funny is I swear I know this. I say it every week, but he said, try guessing this movie quote. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's amazing. I have the same combination on my luggage. Or on my luggage.
Look at you, quoting Spaceballs.
Good job, Zentron, because I would have went blank. So, all right. Yeah, sorry about that, Chris Simpson. My brother.
Kind of a combination an idiot would have in his luggage.
Now that helps a little bit. But all right, well, let me just say, Christopher Dahlberg said, I saw a pic somewhere of a group of Atlex fighting a tribe of Panthers. What is that from? Atlex, I don't know if you mean, well, there's that, remember, there's the Sunbird legacy where they're fighting a whole bunch of Panther men. I didn't know if that's what you meant. I don't know what I feel stupid. I don't know what an Atlec is. Attlects. Do you know what that is, Tyler? I, for some reason, have gone blank.
Wait, say it again now.
He said he saw a picture of a group of Atlecs fighting a tribe of Panthers. Where is that from? Oh, wait. There was that stupid downloading comic, the digital comic that they had a couple years ago that DC or whatever was putting out, the ones you can only get online. And I thought that there was a bunch of Panthers in that, but I don't know if that's what you're asking. I'll be on it. Or if be honest.
And that you didn't see that at all.
Oh, wait a second. Wait a second. He left a B. Oh, wait. He did another post underneath. I saw a pic of somewhere of a group of battle cats fight a tribe of Panthers. Okay, that was underneath his first one. He left the B out. Okay, thanks for that, everybody, for correcting that. A bunch of battle cats fighting a bunch of Panthers.
Can't say I'm familiar with that.
Like I said, maybe in the download stuff, maybe that was that, because even in the Sunbird Legacy...
Ah, hell, well, the download stuff was just trying to get over all these goofy-ass ideas that was part of the new 52 He-Man with Sir Laserlump.
Maybe.
Fair with some guy, like, who cares?
Maybe that's what he meant. So if that was it...
Fluttering, I think it was. Yeah, Fluttering got killed. Pissed off a lot of people.
Yeah, there was a lot of craziness. And yes, Zentron, we did get your question earlier. You'll be able to catch it when you come back to this. But, okay, let me just make sure I got everything. JSP asked if we've seen Sweep the Leg, the video that he mentioned. I didn't watch it yet, but at least Tyler and Nathan knew of it. But I still got to see it, JSP, so sorry I didn't catch that. But, all right. Well, now let me say what I always say. Go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and share your ultimate fan group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken?
Oh, wait. I just watched. Wait, hold on. That was. Oh, wait. That was. I was going to say sidekicks. Wait. Sidekicks? Was it sidekicks? I'm still saying, I'll say sidekicks. Oh, God, I messed up again. See, I told you I don't know these things. Every time I say when I'm wrong, now I'm going to wait to see if somebody... Please
turn towards the chat room, will you?
I'm waiting. All right, we're waiting for you guys in the chat room to say what the answer is. I know that probably JSP will get it, or somebody's going to get that quote. They haven't yet. Well, of course, remember, there's a...
Somebody in there that gets that quote, because he's already, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There's always a 20-second delay. Somebody's got to know that quote, because I sure can't get it. But we'll like I said, give them about... Oh, wait. Okay, there. Now I get it. Okay, Night Runner. Good job, Spaceballs. Damn, why didn't I know that? Because I remember he did call him Kurt. Yes. Yes, Spaceballs again. You got his two Zentron, Night Runner. Yeah. No, Chris.
I was gonna say he better get it, because don't tell me he's like, he can say the quote Spaceballs. I throw one back out and I think it's sidekicks.
Well, there. Well, he. I don't
know. Oh, Bridget. That's a Joe Piscopo in the movie.
I just don't know. I'm terrible at this. So, guys, thanks.
But everything.
Every single week, I get something. I don't know. Once every 3 months. But all right. Again, thanks.
Pick a Friday the 13th quote, just to see if you botched that one, because the only one I think you've gotten was from Friday the 13th Part 8, and I would pick the most obvious one.
Yeah, the one I didn't get was from Part 3 when you were talking about Shelley, when, you know, what was that quote?
I'm not an asshole. I'm an actor.
Yeah, that was the part just went right over my head towards the beginning. It just zoomed, so. All right. Okay, guys. Thanks for joining us. See you guys next week.